devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Vansi Gauranga. Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Tachandra, Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. The Process of Devotional Service, Madhya Viva, Chapter 22, Text 52. O King Rahugana, without taking upon one's head the dust from the lotus feet of a pure devotee, a Mahajana or Mahatma, cannot attain devotional service. Devotional service is not possible to attain simply by undergoing severe austerities and penances, by gorgeously worshiping the deity, or by strictly following the rules and regulations of the sannyas or grihastha order, nor by studying the Vedas, swimming oneself in water, or exposing oneself to fire or scorching sunlight. This verse appears in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.12. Jad Bharata herein tells King Rahugana how he attained the Paramahamsa stage. Maharaj Rahugana, the king of Sindhu Sova, had asked Jad Bharata how he had attained the Paramahamsa stage. The king had called Karius palanquin, but when the king heard from Paramahamsa Jad Bharata about the supreme philosophy, he expressed surprise and asked Jad Bharata how to attain such a great liberation. At that time, Jad Bharata informed the king how to become detached from material attraction. Unless human society accepts the dust, and this is translation for the next text, 53. Unless human society accepts the dust of the feet of great Mahatmas, devotees who have nothing to do with material possessions, mankind cannot turn its attention to the lotus feet of Krishna. This is a very important instruction. Unless human society accepts the dust of the lotus feet of great Mahatmas, devotees who have nothing to do with material possessions, mankind cannot turn its attention to the lotus feet of Krishna. Those lotus feet, now referring to the lotus feet of great Mahatmas, those lotus feet push all the unwanted miserable conditions of material life. Report. This verse appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.32. When the great sage, Narada, was giving instruction to Maharaj Yudhisthira, he narrated the activities of Prahlada Maharaj. This verse was spoken by Prahlada Maharaj to his father, Hiranyakashipu, the king of demons. Prahlada Maharaj informed his father of the 9 basic processes of bhakti yoga. Whoever takes to these processes is to be considered a highly learned scholar. Hiranyakashipu, however, did not like his son to talk about devotional service. Therefore, he immediately called his teacher, Sandamarka. The teacher explained that he did not teach devotional service to Prahlad, but that the boy was actually inclined that way. At that time, Hiranyakashipu became very angry and asked Prahlad why he had become a Vaishnava. In answer to this question, Prahlad Maharaj recited this verse to the effect that one cannot become the Lord's devotee without receiving the mercy and blessings of another devotee. So, this expression, receiving the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, I mean, whoever sweeps the temple room should be most devotee. Because there's so much dust in the temple in front of the morning program. Sweeping the dust. But that's not the... This expression is not that in a literal sense. The blessings and the mercy. not approach God directly. This is own beginning idea. As Prabhupada would say, what to speak of someone who claims that they are God, actually that means they are dog. But even you're approaching God directly. At least, to fully understand who the personality of Godhead is, this is only possible by devotional service. And the yogi may, at his perfection, be able to see the form of God, Paramatma, within. Still, there is no access to devotional service, necessarily. And without that devotional service, then one cannot enter into the dealings between Krishna and his devotee. And through these loving dealings, then to realize fully the personality of Godhead. This is only possible by receiving the things and the mercy of those in here, as we said, described devotees who have nothing to do with material possessions. Now here's this famous verse. Sarasanga, sarasanga, sara shastri koi, lava matra sarasangi, sarva siddhi hoy. The verdict of all revealed scriptures is that by even a moment's association, a pure devotee, one can attain all success. Even by a moment's association with a pure devotee. Report, according to anatomical calculations, lava is 1/11th of a second. Continuing the next text, the value of a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord cannot even be compared to the attainment of heavenly planets or liberation from matter. And what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which is for those who are meant for death. Report, this is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.13. This verse concerns the Vedic rites and sacrifices performed by the great sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka Rishi. The sages pointed out, association with a devotee for even less than a second is beyond comparison to 1,000 Vedic rituals and sacrifices, elevation to heavenly heights, and merging into the existence of the Supreme. Give some at least relative understanding. Categorically, whatever practice may be key to a kind of elevation or another. Some piles of that, whatever it may be, cannot even compare to less than a moment's association with a pure devotee. Translation, Krishna is so merciful that simply by aiming his instructions at Arjuna, he has given protection to the world. Quote, because you are my very dear and I am speaking to you the most confidential part of knowledge, hear this me, for it is for your benefit. Always think of me and become my devotee to me and offer obeisances unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my dear friend. Report, this is a quotation from Bhagavad 18.64 and 65. Translation, although Krishna has previously explained the efficiency of executing Vedic rituals, performing fruitive activity as enjoined in the Vedas, practicing yoga and cultivating jnana, these last instructions are most powerful and stand above all others. Last instructions referring to these two verses from the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The devotee has faith in the strength of this order. He worships Lord Krishna and gives up all other activities. As long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity, has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, one has to act according to the regulative principle of Vedic injunctions. Let me read that again. As long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity, and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, one has to act according to the regular principles of the Vedic injunctions. By rendering trans-loving service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. This confident, firm faith favorable to the discharge of devotional service is called Shraddha. Purport. Firm faith and confidence are called Shraddha. When one engages in the Lord's devotional service, he is to be understood to have performed all responsibilities in this material world. He has sat of his forefathers, ordinary living entities, and demigods, and is free from all responsibility. Such a person does not need to meet his responsibilities separately. It is automatically done. So, meeting of responsibilities in this way, that it's very much dependent on this principle of Shraddha. It's not the performance of certain kinds of duties. And because I'm doing these certain kinds of duties, therefore all my obligations are finished. But this other need is also vital. Fruitive activity, karma, is meant to satisfy the senses of the conditioned soul. However, when one attains to Krishna consciousness, he does not have to work separately for pious activity. The best achievement of all fruitive activity is detachment to your life. And this detachment is spontaneously enjoyed by the devotee firmly engaged in the Lord's service. There's a passage in the Govardhan Lila where the same point is made, that activity performed in knowledge bears the full result. Sacrifice performed in knowledge bears the full result, whereas sacrifice that's performed with imperfect knowledge yields less than a perfect result. So in order for all of our obligations to be fulfilled, to all those who we are dependent upon, and the reference is being made here specifically also, those to whom we are karmically bound, good or bad, or in order for those obligations to be met and in fact severed, then devotional service needs to be one great faith. And that faith is being described devotional service to Krishna being lovingly rendered. But by doing so, everything that I may even care to achieve, that will be satisfied. That's Shraddha. Whether it's liberation or something to accumulate, or whether it's any situation whatsoever. The soul is something other than its state of devotion can even desire. All those things will be fulfilled. What speak of all those things that cannot be fulfilled by ordinary means, relative means, or by liberation, that can't even be touched. In other words, the rewards of pure devotion. How does that great faith become possible? That's already explained by the association of pure devotees. That gift that can be transferred by someone who is in that condition of life through their association. And this Prabhupada describes in Bhagavad Gita that faith was created in the association of devotees. One who cuts themselves off in one way or another from the association of devotees is the biggest fool. By missing the point in essence of how devotional service even begins, but to speak of the goal. So, any comments or questions?
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Esha bhutani bhutatma bhutsho bhuta bhavana sva shaktya mayaya yukta srijati ati cha pai cha esha bhutani bhutatma bhutesho bhuta bhavana sva shaktya mayaya yukta Shrijati cha papi cha Esha bhutani bhutatma Bhutesho bhutabhana Swashaktya mayaya yukta Shrijati cha papi cha Esha bhutani bhutatma Bhutesho bhutabhana Swashya mayaya yukta Sujatyati cha papi cha Esha bhutani bhutatma Bhutesho bhutabhana
King entities Bhuta Isha, the controller of everyone.
Bhuta Bhavana,
container of everyone.
Sva Shaktya,
through his energy.
Maya,
the external energy.
Yukta,
through such agency.
Srijati,
creates.
Ati,
annihilates.
Cha,
and
Pati
maintains
Cha
and Translation: The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the soul of all living entities. He is the controller and maintainer of everyone through the agency of his external energy, creates, maintains, and annihilates everyone. Purport: There are two kinds of energies, material. There are two kinds of energies in the matter of creation. The Lord creates this material world through his external material energy. Whereas the spiritual world is a manifestation of his internal energy. He is always associated with internal energy, but he is always aloof from the material energy. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 9.4, the Lord says, Matsthani sarva bhutani nachaham tesha vastata. All living entities are on me, or on my energy, but I am not everywhere. He is personally situated in the spiritual world. In the material world also, wherever the Supreme Lord is personally present, it is to be understood as being the spiritual world. For example, worshipped in the temple by pure devotees. The temple is therefore understood as being the spiritual world. And that's the end of the purport. There are a number of very basic points in this verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supersoul of all living entities. This is the first of the verse. He is the controller and maintainer of everyone. Through the agency of his external energy, he creates, maintains, and annihilates everyone. Everyone in the corporeal sense, because of course the soul is not created, nor is the soul annihilated. So everyone, sarva bhutani, bhutma. Because our position is servant, everyone has some master. The master is, in one sense, the controller, at least to some degree. Sarva bhutatma bhutatma, the controller of all living entities. If there is only one such controller of all living entities, and that's the personality of Godhead himself. There's a very interesting distinction being made in the report that Krishna is simultaneously always in the spiritual world and then come to the material world also. He never comes in contact with his material energies. For example, the living entities that are brought into this material creation, the contact is made between the Mahavishnu, the Mahatattva, the Supreme Lord Mahavishnu, simply by glancing. The enemies are then, this glance is described in Brahma Samhita, the glance of the Lord that living entities are, he's the father of all living entities in Bhagavad Gita. But is not the normal process of fathering, that the Supreme Lord impregnates living entities into this real energy, but by his glance. And the glance is carried by Lord Shiva. In fact, and more technically, the glance is carried by Sadashiva, who, after coming in contact with the material energy, his name then changes to Shiva. There's this picture on the cover of Canto of the Bhagavatam. There are 11 different Shivas that are pictured. That's different than Sadashiva, because Sadashiva is in a very particular category. Sadashiva is not Jiva, and nor is Sadashiva Vishnu Tattva, but is in a category of his own. But this Shiva is practically the personality of Godhead, however different, because of contact with the Mitanergy, Durga. The Mahavishnu, or himself, never comes in contact with the material energy. Although there is, it's his own energy. It's called his separated energy. But interestingly enough, this separate energy can also become spiritual energy. So, it seems like a contradiction. However, all contradictions are resolved in God, in the Absolute. Because statements we're making about how the Lord never comes in contact with his material energy, nonetheless he can do whatever he likes. In other words, by his coming in, if he were to come in contact, or when the Lord comes into this material world, he actually doesn't come in contact with material energy, because he transforms that energy to spiritual energy, as what descends in his own original spiritual abode. How is this possible? By the Lord's omnipotence. Prabhupada describes that if one doesn't accept from the very outset, a priori, if one does not acknowledge that God is omnipotent, then it is impossible to understand even the first thing about God. That is a very basic, essential understanding. Otherwise, God is a very living entity like us, not omnipotent. He cannot, as he likes, with absolute free will. That is the view of the atheist. God cannot. And of course, then there's the rhetorical question that can God create an object so heavy that he can't lift it? If God is all-powerful, he can create an unliftable object. So if he can't lift it, then how is he God? Of course, we discussed this point in classes earlier. He can do both. He can create an object so heavy you can't lift it, and then he can lift it. Unless one accepts that God has inconceivable, unlimited potency, then you can't even begin to understand about God. You just have to be satisfied being an atheist. But there is, at the same time, for those who are able to accept as a supreme personality of Godhead, who has inconceivable potency, then there is the science of God, so to understand how these inconceivable potencies are working. It's very intimate knowledge when you stop and think about it. Very confidential things are being expressed here about how God does what he does, how his energies are working. We speak of intimate information which comes in later canto Bhagavatam about his personality, the types of confidential dealings that he has with the associates. So the Supreme Lord never leaves the spiritual world. He is always within Goloka Vrindavan. However, due to his inconceivable potencies, he can expand unlimited times in identical features, in other forms, in plenary portions, in portions of plenary portions, which is the category of the supersoul within the heart, and still remain the same, unchanged. Can expand unlimited energy, manifesting his internal potency. And he can transform this internal potency to separated energy. And always residing in one place, always simply enjoying dealings with his associates in Goloka Vrindavan through the manifestations that are in many ways practically equal to him. All the functions of creation can go on. And he never touch it. And he can send carnations, just having a very through the age of these various manifestations that are in many ways practically equal to him. All the things of creation can go on. And he never touch it. And he can send incarnations. Just having a very interesting dialogue, an ongoing dialogue with someone who's knows a lot about our Krishna consciousness movement, also knows a lot about Christianity. He's trying to figure them both out. And he's come across this stumbling point of avatar. What's the meaning of avatar? How does the whole thing work? In comparison to Christianity, how is Christ to be understood? Is there some uniqueness about the particular thing he's trying to zero in on? Is there some uniqueness about Christ that doesn't fit in one of these categories that are described within the Vedas? this point he doesn't have a clear understanding of acceptance of authority. He's trying to figure it out, which makes it pretty hard to figure it out. The verse that we read from Chaitanya Dharmata is very appropriate, where Krishna explains to Arjuna, because you're my very dear friend, this most confidential part of knowledge is easily understandable by you. The term Prabhupada describes in Bhagavad Gita, the confidential knowledge, knowledge of the soul, because that's us. Whatever we make about our bodies and our bodily activity and relations and so forth, that's not very confidential. That's disgusting. Confidential is the soul, because that's who we really are. Just like if you take confidence in someone and reveal your unspoken innermost secrets, if it's pertaining to the body, that's not confidential. Of the soul, that's confidential. And the soul's the position of the personality of Godhead also within this body, that's even more confidential knowledge. Not so many people have a very clear understanding of such confidential knowledge. It's confidential, that's why. And the most confidential is the exchanges between the soul and God. Clear information is being given about how God is situated in the heart of every living entity, and how his energies are working to provide the bodies and functions of body by the Lord's direction and by his control and by his maintenance. That's what these terms are in the verse. Esha bhutani bhutatma bhuteshu bhutavana bhuta. This means all living entities, everyone without exception, all forms of life, as long that soul is soul, it means everyone, everything. That same Lord within the heart is everyone's control, maintainer, provider, and all of this is going on without the Lord doing anything. Just to slip this one in here, obviously, the Lord. We can't provide, support, and maintain even ourselves, let's speak of one other living being. Just like the Prabhupada comments in his writings that in this age, Kali Yuga, if a man can support a wife, he's doing well. He can actually keep it together, maintaining only. Prabhupada tells a little story in that regard. Some, he asked one woman, why his son is not married, all he can be making, he could maintain, speaking when Prabhupada came to America. And from that comment, Prabhupada could understand that actually maintaining a wife and child in America or modern Western countries is actually an accomplishment, but certainly not without some endeavor. Maintaining all living entities while within our heart without doing anything. And then reference to this verse from Bhagavad Gita is also specifically made. Matstani, and here we are again, sarvabhutani. Matstani sarvabhutani chaham tesha vastita. All living entities are resting on me, or specifically on my energy. But I am not everywhere. This is the distinction. What to speak of the prior seeming contradiction? There's even a bigger contradiction, seemingly bigger. And then, again, back to the prior point, unless one accepts that God's inconceivable potencies, this statement will never be understood. It just seems like a bunch of double talk. Krishna's saying, all living entities are resting on me, but they're not resting on me. I am situated everywhere, and all living beings are situated within me, but I'm not, they're not within me. The personality of Godhead exists only in his spiritual abode. Therefore also, states such as the Lord is within the heart of every living being, that means the particular place where the Lord resides within the heart is not an ordinary place. And because of the Lord residing there, not in an ordinary place, that makes the body, when it's properly understood, as also not an ordinary place. When that understanding is there, one just doesn't do certain things with his body, and one will always do other certain things with his body, recognizing that the Lord is situated within. And when that consciousness is there, when it is actually present, that thing is spiritual. That point is being made at the end of the purport. The pure devotees worship the deities in the temple. And where that worship of the Lord is going on, that is not the spirit place. I mean, that is not a material place. That's a spiritual place where the Lord is properly worshipped. Said this a number of times where he visited, and particularly even here in New York. I've mentioned this before also, but from Vyasasan Prabhupada, the first time I heard him say this was in Hindi, and the particular day that Prabhupada gave this lecture, there was a bunch of noise in the street, but it's as usual in that neighborhood in Brooklyn, but because Prabhupada was there, the ladies from all over the East Coast and parts of the West Coast just came piling in, packing into the Henry Street Temple. Hundreds of devotees crammed into the temple room. And needless to say, created a little bit of commotion in the hood, a heavy Italian neighborhood. And so kids were lined up on the sidewalk doing their, you know, Hare Krishna. You just had to close the windows. Anyway, Prabhupada, in the midst of all this kind of a setting, Prabhupada very incidentally and sublimely expressed that this temple is not in Brooklyn. It is in Vaikuntha. Confirmed. And the same thing he said when visiting the temple in Fifth Street. This temple is not in New York. It is in Vaikuntha. Because here is Krishna. Krishna is not outside of Vaikuntha. He is always in Vaikuntha. He is always in the spiritual atmosphere. Just like getting back to a practical level, just like many of the things that Guru Maharaj has been instituting here in the temple, as far as standards established, what should be in the temple, as far as participation in programs and those who reside here, creating a spiritual atmosphere is very important. For acknowledging, honoring the worship of Krishna, so that those who come here actually can experience that transcendental, sublime atmosphere. Because in fact, Krishna is properly being respected and worshipped. Otherwise, just as Krishna is being carried within one's heart, one may never even know it in the course of one's whole lifetime. A materialistic person really doesn't know it. In fact, know it. But the transcendentalist is one who does know that Krishna is within the heart, and the spirit soul, not this body, and then acts accordingly. That consciousness manifests certain conduct and attitude and behavior. And there's the behavior for one who is worshipping the Lord and residing within his abode. The Vaikuntha atmosphere is created by our Vaikuntha consciousness. And our creativities also help us to realize fully that Vaikuntha consciousness. How to understand that all living, the philosophy, that all living entities are spirit souls, parts of the Krishna, and that Krishna is in the heart of all those spirit souls. Chaitanya Prabhu did not discriminate who were fit and who were unfit candidates for devotional service. Why is that? Because materially, certainly, there are differences. Or by piety, certainly, there are differences. But anyone that has performed sankirtan for any length of time can attest to the fact that you really can't tell who is going to receive transcendental literatures and who is just by looking at a person. Especially if you make the experiment of deliberately approaching the most unsuspecting persons. Try this for sankirtan devotees. Particularly for distributing books as opposed to simply giving people and giving donations. Because giving donations for some cause, many people will give donations for cause. But when God becomes clearly in the center, then a whole different action sometimes comes from people. And the most unsuspecting people will give donations and receive literature. This is certainly my experience. By external appearances, you can tell. I can remember times in Sankirtan, particularly in durathons, they're just putting in long, long hours, and such ecstasy would be there from performing heaps and piles of distant books, meeting so many people. Devotees, we would just challenge one another. Take the most unlikely person, give that person a book. And somehow or other that person would receive the book. The kind of persons that, especially here in New York, there's some people on the streets, if you do sankirtan in a very traffic place, you pick and you choose people. But so we were deliberately picking and choosing the most unlikely persons. And they would also take books and to give donations. And this way we were realizing and so many things, the inconceivable potency that Lord and the Sankirtan movement has, and merely by performing the activity, the sacrifice, Krishna can empower the most unlikely of circumstances. And that Krishna is in the heart of all. There are so many descriptions like this that one can realize, just like Satyaraj's newsletter. Very nice. So much realization of this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the philosophy that we find in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, can be understood. If one has an unwillingness to perform sankirtan, to perform that sacrifice that the Lord desires, it becomes very difficult to realize the philosophy. And if one is not realizing the philosophy, it becomes very difficult to endure with any strength in practice of consciousness. One has untold troubles and difficulties. Episode in the airports. Some big puffy people with a big chunky cigar hanging out, and then sometimes with, you know, big family and mama and papa and all the kiddies grooming around all over the place, and give a book to her or to him or to some guy that can hardly walk straight, or some wealthy person that's being ushered along in their little cart. So all kinds of odd situations that material energy presents. And the point I wanted to make is just simply approaches with the understanding. Here's also a spirit soul. It's very eager to meet Krishna. Simply they've forgotten. And our business is simply to awaken to that which they've forgotten. That's all. Somehow, by the empowerment of Krishna, that becomes possible. He has no other desire than to do that on behalf of Krishna. Understand your question? I don't know. As an expansion, but how he exists prior to contact with Mahatattva, I don't know that particular point of information. Do you know, Maharaj? Information the description that is there in Dharma Samhita. Yes, right. Actually one, but there is some technical differentiation, that's a fact. We're supposed to end class at 8:30, and you're asking a technical question, and it was a bit lengthy discussion, so I'm reluctant to get into it. It's a big Sankirtan day. All glories to Sri Krishna Sankirtan.